joined by my brother Jack on the other line in Austin, Texas. How you doing, Jack?
I'm doing well. There's a marathon outside of my apartment today, and there were two guys playing one marimba on the corner, and they kept looking at each other and just going, "Nice, man, nice."
To be fair, were they just killing it on the marimba?
To me, it sounded like they played one song for 2 hours. So I don't know if I've cultivated a taste for marimbas.
Okay, well, you know, apparently there's the opportunity for you right now to cultivate that taste, make some friends.
Yeah, it's been a weird day.
Nice. My big achievement for the day so far is I've been making a lot of bread recently. And so I've got some bread right now rising on my radiator. And so once this podcast is finished recording, I'm putting that loaf in the oven.
Nice. Nice. Yep. Proving on the radiator. Sounds like a Steely Dan song.
Yeah, man. It's good. I've been making a lot of this like kind of focaccia bread.
Nice.
And I've been experimenting, putting different like spices and herbs just to give it a little flavor. And this week's bread is rosemary and fresh cardamom. So.
Oh, look at you.
I know. Pretty delightful.
That is delightful.
So let's talk some soccer. Let's start off with a segment we like to call Three On, Three Off, where each one of us says three people that were taken off or three things we're taking off the field this week and three things we're putting on this week. So let's go back and forth in this. I'm starting with the who we're pulling off the field.
Okay.
Or rather, who is kind of been taken off the field. So my first one is a little controversial, I have to admit. So my first off is Christian Pulisic.
Oh, mine is two.
Oh, okay. It's like we're like brothers or something.
I know, right?
And so the reason I'm doing this isn't necessarily that he's been in a poor run of form. He's been kind of mediocre. But on Dortmund, with Marco Reus coming to form and Mario Götze and Schürrle and all these people just playing better, it's been harder for Pulisic to get minutes. And so in today's game, I just finished watching the Mönchengladbach game, and Pulisic came on as a late sub in that game, and he looked strong, actually. But it still sucks that he's not getting minutes. So that's why he's one of my three off this week, is that it's going to be harder for him to get minutes going forward.
Yeah, I said, well, I mean, he started from the bench today. It just kind of seems like he's having a hard time finding his rhythm under Peter Stoger. Stu Holden said it. He said, you know, he's playing okay, but he's got more goals than him. He's got more assists. And I think that's the thing. Pulisic hasn't been playing poorly. It's just that the end product isn't there. Like, Dortmund has suddenly found its attacking prowess with bats up front, but Pulisic just seems out of step. He's still making runs, still crossing the ball in, still taking on defenders one-on-one, but he's clearly not in sync with the rest of the team. I think the big question is, is this a slump, or is he just not the kind of player who fits into Peter Stoger's system?
Yeah, he looked good when he came on today, and he looked creative. He was making some kind of big passes that opened things up. That was good to see. And he came on at a point in the game where it seemed that, though I hate to use words like momentum, the game has sort of swung in Gladbach's direction. In the second half of the game, Gladbach was getting more of the ball. They were putting Dortmund under pressure. They were counterattacking a bunch. And then Pulisic came on and gave Dortmund a little more, gave him some more legs, it seemed like, and some just kind of like bigger passes that kept Dortmund on the front foot and took some of the pressure off their defense. So he did contribute to the game and played pretty well. But you're right. I think that the way, like, some of his passes weren't quite syncing up with Batshuayi and some other players. And a word about Bats. Like, he did this thing in today's game where he, like, did a flying karate kick at the ball. And he hit the ball but missed the goal. And he looked so disappointed with himself. And I was like thinking to myself, what kind of player? It's just got to be great to be that kind of player where you're like, man, I can't believe I didn't hit that flying karate kick. It was like a Johnny Cage style kick, and you're like,
that's
or
awesome.
Liu Kang, I should say, Liu Kang style kick. Yeah. And it's like, man, he really has high expectations for himself. He expects to hit that one in. Anyway, so we've both taken Christian Pulisic off. What? Who's next for you?
I have William Yarbrough. Even though he's sort of a peripheral figure for the U.S. men's national team, he does start every single week in a really competitive league in Mexico. It wasn't too long ago, it was just a couple years ago, that he led Liga MX in clean sheets and saves. This week, though, he led in 5 against Santos. And yeah, he wasn't helped by his defenders, but I think that was the 8th game of the season, and he's already had 3 games of allowing 4 or more goals. So even though he is one of those people who filed a one-time switch to play for the U.S. and played for the U.S. under-23 team, and certainly a couple of years ago, I think, you know, people were talking about him more, and nobody really talks about him any longer, but it looks like he is sort of digging himself a hole down in Leon.
Yeah, I hope he gets back on track. That is ugly.
Yeah, I mean, and it's also like the more goals that he lets in, the less likely it is that an aging Landon Donovan will, you know, be thrown on for some garbage time.
Good point, man. He's not pulling his weight.
Yeah.
Leo needs some games where they're up by 3 goals to...
Yeah, I know.
...to roll out the senior squad.
Mm-hmm. Well, who's yours? Who's your second?
My second person I'm taking off is Eric Winaldo. And, I mean... The bits of, so I have to admit, I don't follow Winalda on Twitter for intentional reasons. But when I see like his tweets kind of coming through now post election, they're so sad. They're often like the average length of the Winalda tweet that I see in my timeline is like 2 words or 3 words.
Mm-hmm.
And it just seems like he's going through this dark night of the soul and like, who cares? Nothing will ever change kind of thing.
It's like he's like halfway in like turning heel. Like he's almost there, but he isn't quite self-aware enough. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Alexi Lawless knows who he is, and he plays that role really well on Twitter, and it's really annoying, but I also very much appreciate it. Mm-hmm. Whereas like Eric Winalda is just so obviously miserable. He's also I also don't really think he's that bright. Does that sound really bad? Like when I read his tweets, I'm like, yeah, this is what everybody's thinking. Like, I don't know, like what?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. That's no, kind of.
He's a controversial figure, and I feel almost like, honestly, kind of like scared to be critical of him because he seems to stir the troops in this irrational way.
Yeah.
But no, I get the same feeling. I'm not sure how bright he is. He seems to be really just a polemic kind of person who oftentimes takes a stand because he has like an intuitive sense that this is what riles people up.
Mm-hmm.
And is less concerned with, you know, telling the truth and more concerned with like firing people up. And he's definitely going through a downward spiral. And I saw that his Sirius XM show wasn't renewed or he can't get back on it now. So I mean, I root for no one's struggles, so I don't mean to suggest that I am, you know, like going through some
Schadenfreude. Yeah,
yeah, with Eric Winalda. I mean, I hope he has continued success and all that kind of stuff, but he's definitely going through a downward spiral at the moment.
Yeah, my last person that I would take off, because I want to move on from Eric Winalda because I'm scared, is Brad Guzan. Brad Guzan. Because I mean, I know it's not fair.
Your Yarbrough stuff reminded me of like Middlesbrough Brad Guzan. Anyway,
well, Atlanta Brad Guzan looked like Middlesbrough Brad Guzan in the preseason game against the Crew. He was just caught way off his line by this chip by Christian Martinez. Wasn't even, I mean, it was a beautiful goal.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But it looks like he's sort of just didn't have his head in the game. He lost some reaction time. Hopefully it's just sort of off-season rust. But I mean, it surprised me when he came to Atlanta and people were so excited based on his form at Middlesbrough. I like Brad Guzan a lot. I hope that this is not a trend, but he is getting older, so it's hard not to see it as such. And it's also just the preseason, so we'll see.
Yeah. My last person I'm taking off is also in a downward spiral, and that's Bobby Wood.
Mm.
Tweeted some stuff out yesterday about this, too. Watched the Hamburg game, and Bobby Wood had a couple really – one chance that he should have tied the game, and another chance that was really creative by him, but a great touch in the box and then sort of like overhead kick kind of thing. He tries to pull over, but ends up hitting it right at the keeper. Mm-hmm. But like I was saying yesterday, it's so – you look at his performance and you have to think that, like, if we were not American soccer fans and we were, like, Hamburg fans from Hamburg, we would just be like, wow, we're going to get relegated for the first time in club history, and one of the reasons why is Bobby Wood.
Yeah.
He's a no-good striker for us.
Yeah, I think if you're a Hamburg fan and not an American, you're wondering why the hell he wasn't replaced in the transfer window.
Yeah. And, you know, really root for Bobby Wood. Watching his performance for Hamburg, it seems a lot like his performances for the U.S. men's national team, where he plays off people. He's kind of like smart and aggressive, but lacks finishing touch, and frustratingly so. And that, I think, was just even more apparent in the Bundesliga. So sad to see him struggle, but yeah, he's the last person I'm taking off the pitch, mercifully.
Yeah. Well, let's move on to the who we're bringing on. Go from
Becky Sauerbrunn, definitely.
Yes, totally.
Always and yeah, every day. I mean, I'm doing this because she made some funny jokes on Valentine's Day, tweeting out baby clothes, but sort of a joke that she dresses her cat in baby clothes. And everyone started congratulating her that she was having a baby. And she's like, no, just being funny on Twitter. So,
so not soccer related in whatsoever, but definitely just human being related.
Yeah. And I think her tweet was actually related to why. She's like, this is why I'm not getting called up to the women's team anymore, or something like that, kind of a tongue-in-cheek sort of thing.
Oh, damn.
So she's, but anyway, very funny, delightful, happy person.
Awesome.
Thank you.
My first person is soccer related, and that's Darlington Nagby. In the same game with the Crew, I think a lot went wrong for Atlanta, but what I saw of Nagby was kind of exactly what I think fans have been hoping for. He was as much a creator as he was sort of a physical presence going forward. And although the Atlanta front line didn't seem to be firing on all cylinders, and I've heard a lot of criticism for the way Barco has failed to live to expectations in the fucking preseason. But mm-hmm. when, and not if, Atlanta gets their act together, watching Nagby pull the strings yesterday gave me a lot of reasons to be excited for Atlanta. I think he's going to have a huge season. He looked like a player. I mean, it is preseason, but who cares? I love this stuff. He did look like he had a new lease on life. I was very excited.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. The second player I'm putting on the field is Conor De Fuente, which shouldn't surprise anyone. He's kind of a hype train starting rolling, and I just want to keep that rolling right along. Not too much more to say about that, but.
Yeah, well, do you want to mention who he's youth academy, or he's in the juvenile team for Barcelona. They were streaming some game where he scored a goal or scored a couple goals. What's the story with him again?
Yeah, a young prospect, as you said, playing for Juvenal or whatever in Barcelona. Mm-hmm. He played recently in the U20 game for the US too. Just a young attacking prospect, American, playing in the youth system at Barcelona and looking legitimate and getting minutes. So that's great.
Nice. I had him as my honorable mention.
Okay.
Yeah. But the second person that I want to bring on is Sunshine Fontes, who is, just a little bit of background. The U.S. women's national team, U17, won the Copa Provincia de Argentina this past week by scoring 14 goals in 3 games while only allowing 1. There were a ton of multi-goal performances to choose from on this team, but maybe none were more impressive than the 4-goal haul that Sunshine Fontes scored during the opening game against Argentina. Watching, this kind of talent come down the pipeline reassures the nagging worry in the back of my head that U.S. dominance in the women's game will soon no longer be a given. She's 16 years old. She's from Honolulu. She's committed to UCLA already, but 4 goals against Argentina on their home turf in a tournament. So I'm going to say Sunshine Fontes. Hopefully looking forward to a long and successful career from her.
Awesome. And I should say, Conor De Fuente said the U20s, U18s, 16-year-old. So that is awesome. Yeah. That sounds good. And my last one is, I wrote down the initials, AJ. Who is AJ?
AJ? Why did I...
I am blanking on this.
Oh, I thought it was just like a joke.
No, no, no. Aaron Johansson.
Yeah,
he's been playing. He's been playing great, getting minutes for Werder Bremen, and it's been nice to see. He made some comments, basically to the effect that, like, oh, he's got the trust of the manager now, and he's been able to get some more minutes and all that kind of stuff, and he's healthy. So you're seeing. I think that if something is gonna, you know, like keep. Something is going to surprise me this year. It's going to be people like that. Maybe younger people than Aaron Johansson, but folks like that were like, oh, him. I sort of forgot he was maybe a prospect, not necessarily a prospect for Johansson, but oh, I forgot he was maybe on the outside. And now suddenly they're stepping up and taking a step forward for American soccer. And so seeing him get some assists and goals for Werder Bremen has been awesome.
Yeah. I would just want to have a quick note to go back to De La Fuente and Fontes. Mm-hmm. Both names mean fountain.
Well, like Fuente, is this the like fountain of youth?
Exactly. Yeah.
Beautiful. But,
yeah, moving on. My third player that I would like to bring on is Danny Williams, because he's had a couple of down weeks for Huddersfield Town. But not to mention what the English media are referring to as Sausage Gate. Did you hear about this?
Oh God, no! What is Sausage Gate?
He had a wardrobe malfunction.
Oh Jesus!
Yes, directly behind the Huddersfield. I can't remember his name right now for some reason. The Huddersfield Town manager.
David Wagner.
Yeah, David Wagner. Sorry, and so it was right behind. So basically, Sausage Gate was swinging right behind Wagner's head. For a very brief moment on national television. I don't know how I didn't hear about this until
early. Yes.
Yes. But anyways, Williams bounced back against United, even though the Terriers ultimately capitulated to the Red Devils. He made a good account of himself, earning Man of the Match honors from the local Huddersfield paper. I don't know. It's just good to see him come back with some grit against a bigger club and then fight tooth and nail to keep his team in the game. I thought he had a great performance.
Wow. I don't even know where to go after I don't
gate.
Even want to say the word sausage gate. I just want to refer to it as SG.
Yeah, not only as a vegan, but
as
someone with taste.
As a person who just tries to respect other people's privacy.
Yeah.
And now thinking about poor Danny Williams and David Wagner.
Mm. Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, that's definitely... Never mind. Let's move on.
Yeah. So, let's talk about... You know, as MLS preseason wraps up, I wanted to ask you what you're looking for in this upcoming MLS season. What storyline you're most intrigued to watch?
Well, I think I'm going to do the obvious one, and that's going to be Barco. Mm. And like I mentioned before, when I'm in you know the Twitter sphere, the Twitterverse, whatever they call it, I've already seen so much backlash against Barco for not, you know, scoring a goal every preseason game, not creating chances. It's really clear that he's just getting acclimated. He also is learning the language. I know Tata Martino speaks Spanish, but it's not the language that the team communicates in. So, patience. Du calm. Relax. I'm really fascinated with this. I think it could take him some time to get going. Watching him play, he's really, really fast. He's tiny. but I just, as I see this frustration already begin to grow, and people are already mentioning his transfer fee, the $15 million, I think that this could go very poorly in the first month or so.
Yeah, man, can you imagine a sudden like a turn of events where Atlanta goes from being this like, you know, high octane, all cylinders firing team to suddenly being this cautionary tale of international signings and they performed so well last year. If they take a step back, you know, I think that narrative would be in such a like rush, just an absolute breakneck speed. So everyone would be like, oh, look, you shouldn't do this, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
So that you could imagine that just taking over the narrative of Atlanta for sure.
Can I mention one more thing about this that makes it a little bit more complicated? Is that he's taking the spot of a 17-year-old Georgian. So Andrew Carleton, I have seen Andrew Carleton's name on Twitter so much in the last sort of 36 hours saying, well, is Barco better than him, or why, like, if it's preseason, like, Barco clearly isn't playing well, like, let's put Andrew Carleton on, you know, he's 17, mm-hmm. And the fact that he's 17, he's from the U.S., I think if Barco has a number of sort of down performances, I think people are going to make Andrew Carleton into a player that, quite frankly, he is not, but it'll get bitter very quickly.
Well, I'm excited for Carleton. I mean, he's yeah. someone I want to see play this year, and you know, he's played really well with the U18s last year, and played really well in the World Cup. And there were games when you're like, oh, he's actually, you know, like maybe performing the best of everyone on the field, mm-hmm. outperforming Josh Sargent and other folks that you might typically think of having. You know, like your eye being drawn to them. But so, I mean, I get the frustration and I feel that too. And that's kind of what my MLS storyline is that I'm looking for is related to this. But yeah, you've got to think that like teams, like the smart teams, if Atlanta's a really smart team, they are thinking about this and they're trying to work. They've got a plan for how they're going to get Carleton minutes, because he does need to get minutes at a higher level. So it really does him no good to be either on the bench or playing at a lower level than he's capable of.
Yeah. I'm not saying he's a bad player. I'm just saying, like, I do think Barco is better.
All right.
I just think it'll take time.
I like the Barco versus, as a storyline, I like Barco versus
Carleton.
Versus Carleton as something like, as some controversy to spin up. But it would be great to see them as a partnership too. Anyway. Yeah. Okay, so my storyline to watch related to that is and Chris Durkin. We've talked to the DC United Academy folks. We talked with Adam Bells of Scuffed Magazine about you know, midfield options for the U.S. after Jonathan Gonzalez filed the switch with Mexico. And so Chris Durkin is one of those guys down the road. And so I'm curious to see this season if he is able to get minutes. And I think I saw like Brian Schreda and some other folks on Twitter pointing at that like last season would have been a great season to let him cut his teeth a little bit in MLS and get some more playing time for DC United. But, you know, this is kind of not a make or break season, but this is a season where you really want to see him get the opportunity to actually get some playing time and see how he measures up and hopefully struggle a little bit, hopefully succeed a bit, and hopefully just be able to test his game against a higher level of competition. And I know from your interview with John Bello that he, you know, highly suggest listeners go back and listen to that, because like what Bello is telling us about Durkin is that he's just like, that Bello forgets how young he is because he acts like such an adult. And he acts like such a, just like, how can I get better? How can I, blah, blah, blah. He's just already this kind of like professional athlete, completely dedicated mind. And that just totally not surprising to Bello that Durkin has the success, but at the same time that as people in charge of his development, they have to remember like, okay, pump the brakes a little bit, because he will make you forget how young he is.
Yeah. So both of us focusing on youth movement in the MLS for the storyline.
All right, so before we wrap things up, Jack, you want to preview a game of the week for our listeners. What are you watching this week, and why has it caught your eye?
Yeah, I am going to watch Tijuana take on Club America on Saturday at 9 p.m. There are a total of 4 Americans in the game. Sometimes they start. Joe Corona will be there. Sometimes not so much. But really, I just want people to get into Liga MX and to know that, you know, we watch all these games in Germany when there's one American player on the bench who might come in.
Are you talking about me?
Yeah. No. I mean, I did the same thing. But, you know, like we'll watch, you know, some German game where there's no hope of this American player coming off the bench, but maybe they will, maybe they won't, and when, you know, we have Americans playing week in, week out in Mexico, and we're just not interested. So I'm going to highlight Club America and Tijuana. Plus, we've talked about the Tijuana owner before. He's absolutely insane. He has his own private zoo, ties to a whole mess of illicit activities that I won't get into now, but check it out Saturday, 9 p.m.
Yeah, Tijuana, I think we talked about this maybe on air before, but yeah, Tijuana is also an interesting club because so close to San Diego, they've had connections with the American soccer community in San Diego, and so Pauly Arriola came through there and some other folks, and there, if you're looking for a starter club in Liga MX, they're an interesting one to watch. They also do a great job doing some English language social media and all that kind of stuff, so it's a good pick.
Yeah, and if you are a gringo like us, you can join the Gringo Cholos, which is their gringo supporter group. It's a real
Indeed.
Thing. Yeah.
Oh, I know. Don't worry. Yeah.
Check it out.
All right. Well, we'll keep our eye on Tijuana and Club America, and hope everyone has a good week. And next time you hear from us, we'll be talking USSF. Is that the right number of S's?
I know, it's the worst.
The USSF general manager for the men's side. So send us your thoughts on Twitter about that. If you want to send us an email for questions for us or things we should talk about on the podcast or the next kind of bread I should make, you can shoot us an email at softtattooedmillionaires@gmail.com. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Thank you.
And be good.